SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. And I'm laughing because this is going to be a fairly herky-jerky first half hour. It's mayhem here. I'm telling you now. And so I really have been, even though I got up early and got, I tried to get to some things, everything. I mean, we got the local paint guy, Steve Peltier. Steve is here and he's doing something in the front bedroom. And then the guy's starting the kitchen downstairs. Literally just got here in the last like 15 minutes. So we had stuff to go over and it kind of has put me, I think, behind the eight ball a little bit. as the morning rolls, it will be we'll start to get rolling good. But right here, I'm woefully underprepared to kick things off. I can tell you later on, though, you're gonna hear from Tim Layden, and we couldn't get Tim his schedule last week in proximity to Breeders' Cup. We couldn't connect, and he said next week he would have a couple of openings. So Tim Layden in hour three today, and I've got to get used to saying Tim Layden of NBC Sports, right? That part, and I got to get, I suppose we got to get the backstory a little bit. Certainly Tim Layden's departure from SI was very timely, as it turned out. And the move to NBC. So Tim, leading into Breeders' Cup, had a piece that I wanted to talk about, and we didn't get a chance to talk pre-Breeders' Cup. And that piece alone, it was worthy of an extensive conversation. And then obviously after Breeders' Cup, with the results and with the tragic development regarding Mongolian Groom and its aftermath, there's a separate topic for conversation with Tim, but we'll weave it all into a visit with Tim, whose perspective is always balanced and reasonable and very fair. So looking forward to connecting with Tim Layden. And before Tim, we've got a visit also that I was looking forward to. And I told you about the Louisville Story program that found its way to Churchill. And the Louisville Story program concept. It goes back several years and really didn't know anything about it until they came to the racetrack. And upon further review, it's remarkable. Darcy Thompson and Joe Manning, we'll talk to Joe. And those of you in and around Louisville and elsewhere that attended the launch party last week, you undoubtedly met them. Joe Manning conducted the oral history interviews with close to 30 racetrackers that some retired, some very active and involved from all walks of racetrack life. And Better Lucky Than Good, the title. But there's another half a dozen or more, maybe seven or eight other oral histories that are uniquely community centric to life in around the Ville. And if there is as enlightening and as moving as the chapters that I've read so far in Better Lucky Than Good, the rest of the collection must be remarkable. And we'll talk about those with Joe as well. So around 10:30, Joe Manning, 11 o'clock, Tim Layden. Of course, 10 o'clock, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And a lot more about the sale. Yesterday started the parade of racing prospects and, in some cases, stallion prospects. And there were some interesting sales yesterday, including Combatant, that is going to go out west and join John Sadler's barn. David and Gordo scooped up Combatant with, for what, $200,000, which felt like a very reasonable amount. And if John Sadler, you know, can pull an Accelerate, Gift Box, Higher Power type, you know, extract those types of efforts from Combatant going forward as he becomes an older, mature horse. David's suggestion was, you know, why wouldn't he stand stud somewhere? So Combatant, and there was also that Liam's Legend, the two-year-old who's going to head to Saudi Arabia. Yeah, extracted and heading off to overseas. Liam's Legend, a Saudi owner by the name of Khalid Mishref. And he's been very active, actually, acquiring some stock for the new Big Day Saudi Cup and undercard has been. Mishref also acquired a piece of Gronkowski, for instance, from Phoenix. So there's always new, you know, there's always new names that jump in and get involved. So there's some notable results, a number of names that are going to get into new barns. So we'll talk to Sid, and we'll get his further additional analysis. If you were listening, if you've been listening to yesterday's replay, obviously you just finished up with Nicole Russo, and Nicole, you know, I think we hit most of the big storylines. So we'll get more of that from Sid, and. What else? Pete Fornatale. And Pete, I've had a crazy morning. Pete's had a crazy morning. He's been running around because I guess the bus wouldn't wait for Pete and Perrin. So she missed the school bus, so he had to take her to school. And he had some meeting, and he said, it's crazy. So we'll talk to Pete here in the next, I don't know, the next half hour probably. And one of the things, he hasn't had a chance to look at the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. The release yesterday in the afternoon, Tim Schramm, and I had mentioned that I'd reached out to Tim, and they released the full wagering spreadsheets from the BCBC. And it's really entertaining to go through and see the way not just the people that were successful and ended up, you know, on high on the leaderboard, including winner Brad Anderson. And Anderson, you know, notable because he was very modest on Friday and swung into action and actually jump-started things, you know, right away with the filly and mare sprint. And then, you know, kind of treaded water more or less until zeroing in on Vino Rosso and just hammering away at Vino Rosso in a big, big way. So you look through this and you'll see where, you know, how people structured their wagers, what, you know, where they weighted their opinions. It's very valuable. And it's really amazing. It kind of feeds into that discussion I had. Who was that with? Was that with Andy a little? Was that Andy yesterday or Johnny? It might have been Johnny on Monday. The different ways, and actually Jeremy yesterday. That's who it was too. So many different options in terms of capitalizing on these fields and on the kind of day, whether it's Breeders' Cup or any big weekend, Triple Crown season and Triple Crown itself and Saratoga, Del Mar, Keeneland, Oaklawn, whatever, Gulfstream, whatever your focus is through the course of the year. And for instance, if you look at Dick Girardi, Dick, as has been reported, Dick went to town on Bricks and Mortar and United. $2,000. Two 1,000 bets, but 2,000 total, straight exactus. Bricks and Mortar over United that netted $137,200. And Dick basically was mostly betting exactas and doubles, and a few tries. Heavy-handed doubles, and this gets to that, and obviously, in terms of the multi-race options are limited to doubles. No pick threes, pick fours. Which, could skew the whole thing. But doubles, exactas, tries, was obviously, win bets and straight bets, whips. And it's just amazing to see it how everybody, attacked the sequences. In a lot of cases, it looks to me like it's funny that the exactas and the doubles and the win bets were the majority of options that made up ground and that registered. So we'll get a chance to do some analysis, and Pete's just reaching out to me, so we'll see what he's got going. He may need to delay things. So can't tell you for sure. Not now if Pete's going to join us. Seth Merrill later, too. We haven't talked to Seth in 2 weeks, and feel bad. We just, because Seth tapes on Thursdays. He tapes, so we can't talk to him if we don't get to him on Wednesday. So there you go. All right. What else can I tell you going into this? We've got cancellations to deal with, right, today. You've got cold weather and assorted issues that KO'd some cards, including Churchill. That news came by Marty McGee. I thought that, make sure that that's still correct. I could have sworn that Marty, right? I'm losing track of days when you got these Monday holidays. I could have sworn. Yeah, Wednesday racing canceled at Churchill. And also Finger Lakes. Finger Lakes, I know, moved their card yesterday to Friday. They just rescheduled for Friday. All right. It was actually a very good race today. There's a good allowance race today at the lakes. So no Churchill today. I don't know if anybody else. Those are the two that that caught my eye yesterday. Yeah, yesterday was bizarre up here. It's so rare that you get a day where, you know, the weather comes through in the early part of the day like it did. And, of course, Tina, boy, you should have seen Tina. She worked more here in the house yesterday than she would have at school. I kid you not. She was a buzz of activity all day long in anticipation of what we got. You don't know what you can't imagine what's going on here. We have to clean out the front bedroom, which is never used. That has to be painted and some. Yeah, there was an earthquake up in Peru near the border years ago. Near Plattsburgh, and we felt it here, and it did plenty of damage, and I've never really bothered to. There's, you know, some cracks in the plaster that date back to that, and so Tina's looked at it long enough, so we had to like clear out the whole bedroom, and oh my God, stuff's piled on top of each other, and then of course the kitchen has been stripped. She and I did as much advance work as we could. So you've got everything from the kitchen that's in the dining room. It's just this. and you know what's going to happen. I mean, none of it is good. Things will not be ready for Thanksgiving. That's the bottom line. So. But it's underway, right? We can live through it for 2.5-3 weeks, I guess. Let's take a break. Sorry to be so disorganized this morning, but I nothing I can do. Back after this, at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a...
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. And the good news is able to engineer a few maneuverings. And Tim Layden is going to join us now. And in fact, Tim is appreciative because it suits him even better. And so we'll get Tim Layden in here and have our conversation with Tim now. And then Sid. And now Pete has got a bigger window, so we'll probably talk to Pete around hour three. And that gives him time to review. He said he really had not dug into the BC Betting Challenge results yet, so that'll even give him time to do that. So Tim Layden will join us. And in the meantime, by the way, because it's irresistible to me, and I do have an interesting connection to last night's action. On the basketball court. This was like you know, Ellis Park essentially beating Keeneland. Evansville, the win over UK, and my business partner Barry Fry, who a lot of you remember from the Carolina barbecue days, Barry went to Evansville and Lehigh and split his time at Evansville. So when that game ended the way it did, I thought of Barry, and it happens to be his birthday too. So a pretty good birthday present for my man, the Baron. And I'm not going to gloat, but this is a big for, you know, Evansville and that region. You know, it's not obviously not just the racing that's getting better at Ellis Park and that region. Good for Evansville. That's a big win. Big win for them. And I know that the UK the UK faithful have got to be beside themselves, especially because of how much fun it is for the Louisville for the Louisville fans to gloat under a situation like this. So, yeah, that's all I'll say. I'm not gonna make it worse for everybody for the Wildcat fans. Tim Layden joins us from NBC Sports, and I said earlier, Tim, I don't know how long it's gonna take for me to lock that in. Tim Layden, NBC Sports. Good morning.
I have been more than once in the last couple of months. I've called somebody and said I'm from Sports Illustrated and had to correct myself afterwards. So it's going to take some time for me too.
Well, and before we do anything about the recent, you know, the variety of stories of late and Breeders' Cup and its aftermath. We haven't spoken, actually, and I was remiss in sending out congratulations with the NBC move. But boy, it sure feels like you were ahead of the curve making a transition.
Yeah, and I don't want to. I take no joy in that at all.
Sure.
You know, I had a great. I had 25 years and 3 months at Sports Illustrated, and I didn't have a really bad day in that entire time. And in today's media universe, that's an incredibly fortunate thing. And I sensed that there were some big changes coming, and I just didn't want to be around for that. And I didn't want to be around for that, Steve, because I didn't want to leave a really unpleasant taste in my mouth. And so I thought it was good to get out. I had some plans, and but NBC stepped in at the same time and said, well, if you're leaving SI, would you like to continue doing some writing for us in addition to what you've already been doing? And I thought about it and figured I might have a little gas in the tank. So here we are.
Tremendous. And the role, actually, considering, you know, considering your tie to racing, and, you know, I guess we can call it a predilection. I mean, there's certain things that you enjoy, obviously, covering. You like athletics and track and field,
sure,
a favorite area of yours as well. And but the racing, you know, really feels like it's a passion. And the role that TV networks have utilized with someone like you is really, it's really special, actually. And it I imagine, I don't know how much more that the role may morph, but, you know, the literate commentary and the Haywood Hale Bruin and Jack Whitaker-esque type essays, those are a staple, really, of racing coverage, especially.
For sure, and I've been doing those kind of things for a couple of years for NBC, not only on racing, but gosh, on the NFL and on Notre Dame and on Olympic sports. And it's, as you mentioned, they're really, NBC's I'm fortunate that they're such a good fit for me, because, you know, I've covered the last 14 Olympics and they own the rights to the Olympics. And I've done a lot of racing, and racing is a part of their stable of events, and the NFL as well. So it's a pretty good fit, and the role can evolve. There's also they have not, in a lot of their coverage, had somebody who's a really kind of a news reporter. And that's, I'm not a hardcore news reporter, but I do report news. And I think that fits into their mix too. And they've encouraged me in that area. So I think it's a good fit. And it's obviously, you know, one week, 1 month at a time. But it's been good. And I do think it is a good fit. And I'm really, really appreciative that they decided to bring me in.
What other roles are you going to be involved in? Are there other topics and other coverage plans that you expect to be utilized?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's evolving, because they've never really had somebody that with my particular history and skill set. So I think that I'll continue to write sort of longer feature stories on a variety of topics. I'm sure there'll be a lot of racing in there. There'll be a lot of Olympics. I'm doing one right now that's a football piece. So I think there'll be a mix of that with maybe shorter game stories, like after the Breeders' Cup. And then the TV appearances, you know, the essays and some TV features where I interview people. I think it's, you know, I mean, I was at NBC yesterday, and we discussed a variety of things upcoming, and they're sort of all in different platforms, and that's exciting too, not to just be a writer, although I'll always just be a writer. It's good to do some other things, and I think the role will evolve as they figure out what they want me to do and as I adapt to it. So it's and all that's good at my advanced point in this career. So you know, to be doing some new things to keep my energy fresh and those things. So I'm thrilled about it.
Well, as usual, racing as a template for stories, as ever productive, and the options are typically, you know, just unlimited. However, there's a shadow that, you know, just even before the Classic on Saturday, a week ago Saturday, there was this, you know, sword of Damocles that just even when it falls, somebody's there quickly to set it back up again, to eagerly await its next fall. And you had actually broached that topic leading in to the weekend. And you and I talked Breeders' Cup week about a follow-up to that piece, kind of anticipating, Tim, that we wouldn't need to visit a tragedy like we're going to have to. So I now have to ask you, basically, it's a pair of bookend pieces that you wrote. You wrote the Mongolian Groom aftermath, bringing in, one of the most famous pieces of writing in sports journalism history. And then there was the prequel. So I guess I'll just set you up to say, talk about the opening piece leading into the weekend, and then how you viewed things as they unfolded.
Yeah, obviously, this goes back to the NBC relationship too, because they obviously, everything I do is discussed with them, and there's a more of a hands-on relationship there than there had been at SI, because NBC has a business relationship with horse racing, so there's that does complicate matters. But they have been great with me about writing in this manner. And we first brought it up last spring, Steve, actually leading into the Derby. And, Rob Hyland, the executive producer of the horse racing stuff, and others approached me and said, we need a piece that establishes where the sport is right now. And this was last May. So I did a TV piece sort of trying to put that in perspective. And as we went on through the summer, I did another one that was in a Keeneland telecast in September. And we got to the Breeders' Cup, and we decided to do three TV pieces and a print piece. And, I talked it over with various people and said, do we want to go back there? Do we think that there's still a sense of worry and of importance to this whole topic of horse welfare in relation to racing and the Breeders' Cup? And the general thinking was that the story is still there. We still need to sort of, I don't want to say close the book on it, but close the year on it. So that was the impetus for the piece leading into the Breeders' Cup, in which I, quoted W.C. Heinz's great piece, Death of a Racehorse, and then also Paul Moran's equally great piece after Gopher Wand went down in 90. And the purpose of that was just to say that both of those stories, at the time they were written, while they were beautifully written and had great empathy at the same time, there was no outrage in those stories. The stories were written with an acceptance that horses die at the racetrack sometimes. And without restating the entire piece, my view was that's changed. And I'm not sure anybody would, even those that are very angry at that existence, I'm sure most would not disagree. And that's the voice I tried to bring to that, was that racing has to catch up to the view of their sport that now pervades society, which is different from when those two pieces were written. And yes, I was pecking away at a story in the NBC trailer for 2 days as one race after another went by, and I did a couple TV appearances, and we talked about it on the air that, okay, three races down, four races down, five races down, and every horse is going back to the barn on four legs. And that was a good thing, and I think everybody, obviously a small sample with more attention being paid to it than ever would be at a normal two-day period at any racetrack in America, but still, it was a very festive view, great races, great stories. And then, as the sun is setting on Saturday evening, Mongolian Groom goes down. And unfortunately, that changed what I had to write. And, you could put me in the public square and say I made too much of one death. But I think one death is pretty big in this context.
In that context, the prequel that you wrote, in and of itself, really hit all the marks and really framed this discussion and the ongoing tensions. I thought very well, and it it's one of those pieces that has to be read a couple of times, frankly, because there's a lot going on, and you weave a lot into it. It's almost like I can't discuss the pre-piece without, you know, without the aftermath, Tim, because does it change anything about what you wrote going into the weekend?
Not in terms of the larger view, which is that I think that racing, that the earth has shifted beneath racing's feet, and racing needs to get its balance, I guess, to stretch the metaphor further. So I think you could make the argument that had racing escaped from Santa Anita, 10 days ago or whatever it was, without any incident, that would have been almost a false positive in some ways, because the problem still exists. But I would have loved to have, again, I had many paragraphs written on a very positive story, some of which survived in the final story on Saturday night, but in a very different voice. I wish I had just written that positive story and said, okay, this is, now we know this can be done. Let's see if racing can build on the momentum of the Breeders' Cup and make real substantive changes. But that didn't happen, and I think I just think that it was just very sad that it happened, but yet maybe the sport didn't need to get away unscathed, because that would have been maybe the sigh of relief would have been too deep had that happened. I would rather have written that story, though, I'll say that. And I would rather not have been walking up the track on Sunday evening to, see what was going on at that horse ambulance. And, this is another sidelight to this is, I was riding down in the elevator in my hotel on Saturday morning, and, a guy looked at my credential and saw NBC, saw my name, and just said, have a good day today. I hope, I just hope they all get around. And he said to me, yeah, we don't need any more bad publicity. And I looked at him and I said, well, actually, what you don't need is any more dead horses. And, I just recoil at the idea that anybody who's one ring outside the industry, which is where I am as a media person, who's not supported by the industry, none of us want to be writing about dead horses. But I think I said to somebody, I felt, my heart just sank when I looked up the track and saw Mongolian Groom, but then I had to go to work. And that's just the way it goes. And yes, I do, back to your initial question, I do think that the point I tried to make in that initial piece was that there are a lot of parts, as you said, to solving this problem, or at least mitigating it. And they're all in play every time a horse race gets run. And they were all in play at the Breeders' Cup for 2 days, and people have a lot of ideas, but the industry needs to move forward, and in some huge, probably disruptive way, whether it's all synthetic tracks, which I think everybody with the truth serum would say that's the answer, or that's the best answer. But there's other things too. And, but I don't think 30 veterinarians on site is practical at Finger Lakes. So it's just, I don't have a bow to put at the end of this statement. I'm sorry that what I wrote before the Breeders' Cup became so germane to what I had to write afterward. I wish it hadn't happened that way.
I mean, it frankly only, would have delayed things until, the two incidents, three really, at Del Mar on
right.
Sunday. And, yesterday Graham Motion was with us, and Dr. Stephen Allday, too, who was highly critical and I thought a little over the top about the way things were handled. with Graham, Tim, who's as reasonable and practical and measured as any horseman and any stakeholder could be.
Sure.
And I asked him, how are you supposed to, as an industry, quote unquote, how are you supposed to, I don't even want to use the word placate, because there's obviously no placating the most vociferous critics and people that would basically want to end the industry. The industry is not going to be ended. The industry is enormous, employs hundreds of thousands of people, is highly viable, and until people stop eating animals, until that happens, there's no reason, frankly, for horse racing to be the subject of such virulent attacks. To me, and granted, I'm I live it 7 days a week, but it's so bizarre that people would attack the industry if 2,000 or 3,000 horses annually, and this number keeps receding because of all the efforts that are going into protecting horses. Don't people understand, or can they be made to understood, that is not an unacceptable cost to employ hundreds of thousands of people? Why can't we just say that as an industry?
I think the industry can try to say that. If I were the crisis manager for horse racing, which I don't think they employ on a wide, I'm not sure I would go that way. One of the interesting things in reporting the initial piece that I did was sort of trying to learn a little bit about the public's relationship with animals. And because I think that it's a fair point that people eat cows and people eat pigs and people in many places eat animals that are, I think you'd say, a little more in the game category. They eat deer, people eat rabbits, you know. People eat all kinds of fish. The question is where there was a point, you know, without doing a big long history thing here, not that long ago when our grandparents were alive, when even dogs were not nearly as humanized as they are in our current culture. And that sort of happened in the middle of the 20th century where people, Susan Orlean wrote this great paragraph that basically, in her book about Rin Tin Tin, but she basically wrote that dogs went from the doghouse in the backyard to our bedrooms sometime after World War II. And I think we, 30,000 horses died in World War I. They were a big part of World War I, a huge part of the military effort, and to a lesser extent in World War II. So horses have had, I think it comes down to where you draw your own, I guess, in some ways, your own personal food chain, I guess. But it's not, in a sense, it's not my job to tell people where to draw that line. And clearly, as Sid Fernando, who's a very respected pedigree guy, said to me, that this really comes down to, in some ways, you as a human being, do you view a horse as a piece of livestock or a pet? And that is overly simplified, but when you think about it, clearly a player in this discussion. And I don't think racing's answer should be to try to placate anybody or to manage a crisis here or to win a public relations battle, because I don't think it is a public relations battle. I think that battle is lost. And I think racing can shut this down very effectively by just reducing the number. I agree with you that racing isn't going to be shut down, but it can be diminished greatly. And I think that, there are plenty of powerful forces at work that could really accelerate that process. And I think that, to me, the best and most viable answer is, just take that number of 1.86 per 1,000 or whatever it is, which doesn't include training breakdowns, and just really knock it down. Get it down to one. And then I think a lot of this will go away. Maybe it'll go away anyway, Steve, because crises pass. And, as I wrote in my initial piece, the NFL in some ways managed to weather the concussion storm, although it still exists and the game is still shrinking at the youth level and may eventually be in a real crisis. But the public relations battle there, you just don't hear it discussed as much, you know, as it was in 2010, 11, 12, 13. So in a way, they just held their breath and got through it. And maybe racing can do that until the next Santa Anita in the spring of 2019 takes place, whether that's a year, two, or three from now. But this will happen again. And to me, the best answer for racing is just take the number down and get put smart people in a room and figure out how to do that. I am, as I said a few minutes ago, I'm a big fan of synthetics. I understand all the reasons why some people are not. But I think that if there's any one thing that could drive that number way down, that's it. And then I think you'd find the crisis abating fairly quickly. And it would maybe eventually satisfy everyone, although not right away.
Yeah, and that's a fair, that's certainly a fair position. And the one thing that synthetics certainly would do, it would put an end to natural condition influenced spates of breakdowns.
Catastrophic breakdowns.
Yeah. Because the game is played outdoors, and there's countless influence on natural surfaces. At the same time, Tim, the situation at Santa Anita, very unique because it was a combination of natural circumstances involving the racetrack as magnified and worsened essentially by management decisions and management influence. We can also look at something like what happened at Aqueduct in 2012, where the task force responded and came through with more than two dozen recommendations that were put into practice that have absolutely positively impacted those statistics. And so even, even with dirt and ongoing dirt, I mean, there's a positive story to be told in that regard. So that's what I think makes this, so much more difficult. Obviously, the Santa Anita specific issue and the issues that California Racing, given that it's an island and given the stakeholder structure with the TOC and the CTT and a very convoluted, administrative structure causes, comes some added burden to the whole situation. But there's been positive stories maintaining natural surfaces, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there has. The problem is, in my view, and again, looking at it from that one ring outside, making my living in the industry, and I want to be very sensitive to that. It's easy for me to stay outside knowing that, if there's no racing, I'll write about something else. And if you're making your living in racing, and not if you're making millions off racing, if you're supporting three people on a very minimal income because you are a morning backstretch worker, your view is a lot more personal than mine, and I want to respect that. And I understand that. To me, racing needs a solution that, Aqueduct was a spike that was solved in the moment. I don't know what Aqueduct's numbers are currently. Saratoga's numbers were not good last summer, for instance. That's the same, different track, same racing association. Very good horses for the most part that are well cared for. To me, racing needs a solution that is longitudinal, you know, that isn't an emergency answer to a single situation, because those single situations will, historically, we've learned, will probably continue to pop up for whatever reason, whether it's track conditions, bad luck. We've seen historically that these things do happen in clusters. Then those clusters bring attention to the larger picture. And if I were, again, in that room with smart people trying to solve the overall problem, I would try to say, what can we do that creates no more spikes? Okay, what can we do that makes racing terrifically safer 10 years down the road? But at the same time, I understand that we are not good as a culture at thinking 10 years down the road. You know, I use the, again, I don't want to mention something that's political, but just very briefly dip my toe into it and say, think in terms of something like global climate change, which you can believe in or not believe in, but you, wherever you stand on that, and I think the science is pretty compelling, it's hard to get people to pay attention to it when it might disadvantage or inconvenience them in the present to convenience or help someone long after we're dead. And that's a very hard way for people to think. And I think racing almost has to think that way too. But the people that are very successful and making a lot of money and doing well in racing right now don't want change. And I understand why they don't want change. A lot of very disruptive and severe changes to the sport are going to affect people's lives in the short term tremendously. And, you know, the hope that I would have is that you make radical change and then 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, racing looks very different, but maybe healthier and safer. But again, that's a hard pill for someone in the present who's maybe training Kentucky Derby winners to swallow. And I just think that the answer isn't emergency fire drills to put out fires that exist in the present. It's to think, how can we prevent these fires from starting for the next generation or two?
Well, and certainly a reasonable thought process. There's an argument, Tim, if we turn the clock back 50 years to 1970, the lack of foresight then in terms of the wagering mechanisms and the landscape, it could be argued that the lack of foresight then has caused just a myriad of racing's current malaise, because, you know, the powers that be at the time didn't understand what was going to happen in the away from, you know, the at-home wagering concept.
Right.
They absolutely, you know, missed that boat. And as Fred Pope famously has called it, the inverted pyramid, you know, this structure now where, you know, money is siphoned off out of the wagering dollars that, you know, that goes, you know, less to the bricks and mortar, and it's put this tremendous strain. It's created this artificial, you know, subsidy scenario from the gaming, and mm-hmm. it's all very perilous. And I think some of the inefficiency or the paralysis comes from, you know, an already precarious business model that that probably needed to be addressed 30 years ago or 20 years ago, and wasn't. And so dealing with this, you know, what some people are calling an existential crisis, is you know, provoked a bit of a deer in the headlights response.
I totally agree. And the business model you describe is just another one of the many ways in which the digital world disrupted the analog world. And none of, I mean, it's not, most of those ways are not bad. Some are. And I just think, again, you know, I just go back to, you know, what you said earlier, that I do love writing about racing. And, you know, I find myself, I think like a lot of people do, frustrated that I can't do that anymore with a free heart, I guess I would say. You know, it just becomes challenging when every time you write a story, and this happened with football too, and I've seen it happen with Olympic sports and performance enhancing drugs, where you just have that little devil on your shoulder saying, write some qualifying sentences here. You know, you got to be aware of the larger picture, and you know, where you have readers that have come into this world of understanding racing's current crisis, and they want to learn about it and they want to know. And so the sport has been made less fun to cover, and for very good reasons, but anybody who covers it, being honest with his own conscience, is going to say that's a sad and frustrating thing. We all want to write happy stories about successful people expressing their joy, and to have to do these other kind of stories is part of the job and an important part of it, but nobody gets up every morning to write about horses dying, or Olympic athletes being busted for drugs, or NFL players being drummed out of the game for concussions, you know, or having challenging lives because of concussions they got. No one wants to write those stories, but those stories are there right now. And again, I go back to, I think racing maybe they can dodge this. Maybe time just goes by and heals these wounds until the next one. But yeah, racing is a very complex industry in many ways, more so than football, more so than even the Olympics, which are extremely convoluted and splintered as well.
Well, the most frustrating part about the conversation here is that we've spent 30 minutes, and it's largely been about, and part of it, of course, was already going to be about what you wrote going into it, and that was really at the heart of our getting together, because I thought it was so well done and so well framed and wove together, you know, so many of the elements that make this complex. From a more cheerful standpoint, how did you hit him over the weekend?
I don't bet, Steve. You know,
not right.
No, it's a long story, but I bet a lot on horse racing when I was first covering it in the late 70s and into the mid 80s, and I was terrible at it, and it made me a poor journalist because I couldn't. And my Armageddon came when Tim Wilkin and I bet, I think, 50 or 75 bucks each to win on Polish Navy in this 1987 Travers. And, you know, I think he went off at about 6 or 8 to 1, and we were going to make a big score. And he made a move to the lead on the rail at the quarter pole and then flattened out and finished fourth. And I could barely type my column because, you know, whatever I bet, 75 to win or whatever, I was probably making 150 a week. So it was I just kind of made a decision going forward that I was just going to – I wasn't getting any joy from betting. I was just – it was making me – it was affecting my writing and my journalism and my attention to the facts at hand. And I just thought I'd be a better turf writer if I put my wallet in my pocket. And I've just stuck with that. But you know, the Breeders' Cup was just full of great stories. I mean, you know, seeing a 2-year-old American Pharoah colt win a Breeders' Cup race, Belvoir Bay winning the I think it was the Terp Sprint, right? You know, after, you know, 23 months after being lost in a fire. I mean, just amazing stories. And you know, it's just watching Ricardo Santana's response when Donna Brothers interviewed him, just literally crying, thanking the people that helped him get onto the back of that horse. I mean, the Breeders' Cup was a great event, and I just can't repeat enough that, you know, I was down near the winner's circle when Vino Rosso came across the line, and, you know, it was a wide-open classic, and it was cool to see a horse win from some people who really love racing, you know, and you know, it was literally 10 seconds after he crossed the line that somebody jabbed me in the ribs right there and said, and nodded her chin up to the top of the stretch where, you know, or you know, between the quarter pole and the eighth pole where Mongolian Groom was. I just literally could feel my heart sink into my belly when I looked up there. And, you know, not just because I had to rewrite a story, but just because the whole thing flipped in that moment. And, you know, it was a great 2 days of racing and stories, and it just had a lousy ending.
And that's, you know, that's been, that really has been the driving theme that I think, you know, everybody has dealt with. And, you know, we've couched all the discussions that way. And
it was fun to see how happy people were for 2 days. And that's the way it is at any big racing day. That's the, people win. People put so much time into their horses that when they people win, they cry. And, you know, that doesn't happen everywhere. And it's a very cool part of racing because, you know, and again, that's where, you know, it's another, you know, paradox here is that you can say, well, how can we be crying about losing a few horses when, you know, we eat animals and this is an industry that employs thousands of people, but then you watch the way a groom treats that horse. Well, that groom is not treating that horse like an animal that's going to be eaten. And I'm sorry to be harsh with that language, but there's a connection there between humans and animals that it's very real. And it runs counter to the argument that there's acceptable losses somewhere. And, you know, I hate to keep coming back there, Steve, but it's just, it's a super, super complex topic to me.
No doubt. If you want to have that portion of a conversation, I mean, I would counter and say that, and especially living where we live in Washington County, which is the first or second most agricultural and rural county in New York State. And I went to Colgate and worked in the on farm news for the Oneida Daily Dispatch. Madison County is the number one dairy producing county in the state, and Washington County is number two. All you have to do is go to the county fair and watch 4-H kids and FFA kids that are raising calves and raising all American, you know, livestock. They know where that animal's going. And I'm if I bristle at times about this, Tim, it's because there's a group of people here who are so far removed at this point. I mean, this is like Zager and Evans, like the 25-25. You got people that are so far removed from practical life that they are going to sit in judgment of people who are not afraid to lose a horse over the course of it engaging in what it's bred to do. And I tell you, at the heart of all of this to me is that there's a group of people who are afraid of what the horse racing industry represents, which is ultimate risk takers and people who are not afraid to feel the emotion of the extreme highs and the extreme lows. They want to insulate themselves into some kind of protective cocoon. And they're scared of people like us that are involved in this sport.
I'm not saying that you're not right on a big chunk of that. And by the way, I grew up in Washington County in Whitehall.
Yeah, so that's right. You know, I don't have to tell you.
I played football and basketball with kids who had been awake for 5 hours before they went to school.
That's right.
To handle the morning milking and all that kind of thing. So I know that world. I know those people, and some of them are lifelong friends of mine. And I can't debunk what you're saying, Steve. I think that the racing world, I hate calling it an industry because it seems to dehumanize it, but the people in racing, not all of them, I just think you have to be careful about thinking that this is only about special interest groups, because at this point I don't think that's the case anymore. I think that demonizing those special interest groups, I understand why there's great emotional force in doing that, but I just think that it's missing the target at this point, because the outrage, which could easily go away again, but in the present moment, the outrage goes beyond those groups. And
sure,
you can measure that just by, I don't know if you can do it in Saratoga, but you can do it in a lot of places, because it's happened to me randomly a number of times where people who know nothing about racing, where are you going this weekend? I'm going to the Pennsylvania Derby, and they say, hey, what the heck is going on with horse racing? And these are people who don't follow it. So I think that has taken root in the larger culture. I don't know how large, but I know that it's gone beyond the people that carry signs at the entrances to racetracks. How far it's gone and whether it can be brought back, I just don't know.
Well, you'll be there to record and react, undoubtedly.
Yeah, I'd like to write about it less. Somebody said to me, you know, in the NBC compound during the Breeders' Cup, they said, hey, are you looking forward to writing happy stories at some point? You know, I said, I wake up every morning looking forward to writing happy stories. You know, it's but again, you go where the news goes, and people can stand in judgment of how newsworthy something is. And I respect that, and that's, you know, taking that criticism as part of my job and yours. And you just move on and look for the next happy one and hope that you can write it.
Well, Tim Layden, as always, provocative and fascinating. And I since we have Washington County in common, did you follow the most important story out of Washington County on Election Day?
I did not. What happened?
Argyle voted to.
Argyle's not going to be dry anymore, right?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Let me just say, having grown up in Washington County and made regular visits back through there, I never got the impression that the good people of Argyle had trouble getting wet, so to speak.
Well, they could go up to Fort Ann or down to Greenwich, but for those of you that missed this story,
isn't Hartford?
Hartford, absolutely, Hartford, yeah. Granville,
yeah, yeah.
It made the Washington Post and the Times. Argyle overturned prohibition last Tuesday after they had gone, I think, 0-for-11. They had tried 11 times.
Wow. Was it a close vote?
No, it was basically it was about a 3-to-1 margin. They got trounced. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well.
So the stewards can start carrying beer. That's the good news.
Yeah. Well, Washington County is an interesting place. My father ran for public office when I was 13 years old, and I went knocking on doors with him, and I went to the Washington County Fair in Greenwich for 3 nights with him. And it's actually a very different county between Kingsbury and White Creek and between Cambridge and Argyle. And some of those towns nowadays are basically bedroom communities for Albany, and some very much are not. So it's an interesting place, and still holds a wonderful spot in my heart.
I loved your piece. You wrote about you went to Whitehall, right?
Yeah, playing football at Whitehall and all that.
And they're merging. Who they merge with?
I heard they're merging with Granville, which is just for someone my age and my experience is just, you know, it's. I mean, I went to Williams. It's like Williams merging with Amherst, or Harvard merging with Yale, or the Yankees merging with the Red Sox. You know,
I saw the note, and there's a lot of that going on here. Salem merged with Cambridge,
of course, yeah,
for sports,
yeah. And it's mostly a sport, sports thing, and it's happening all over America especially in helmet sports and. That's a real thing too.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that. When this came up, I saw that you had. I think it was a tweet, maybe that
it was
that,
a tweet. Yeah,
yeah.
Someone sent me an article about it. So it's tough. I mean, as someone who, you know, as a football player in high school, and in the other sports, but mainly in football, you grew up going to the Granville Whitehall game and. Starting
sure.
when you could walk, and then when you were a player, it became, you know, the crowning moment of your season, last game every year. It's not the last game anymore because of playoffs and things like that. But it's hard to imagine. And then those kids from Granville were great friends of ours too. So it's it's one of those great small town rivalries, and it'll be sad to see it gone if that happens.
Well, the most difficult part of all this is none of us can beat Cambridge. That's the biggest problem.
I know. Somebody's got to break that up.
Tim, I so enjoy your visits. Thank you so much.
Okay, Steve. Thanks.
Always great. Bye, Tim Layden on Twitter now, and his new home, NBC Sports. Let's take a timeout. We'll come back. Sid Fernando, who Tim referenced, Sid joining us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. We've got the Louisville story program to talk about, too. And Joe Manning going to join us. And like I told you last week, if you have not had a chance yet to order Better Lucky Than Good, you're going to want to. Incredible. Oral histories from the backstretch of Churchill. It's so moving and enlightening. It's just incredible. And the wider this spreads, the more people that read it, it's going to become an essential addition to any racing library. Thanks to Tim Layden for that. Let's take a break. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the song on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood fraternities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a grade one race but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 15 into hour two. 45 minutes with Tim Layden, always time well spent. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillandale.